Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mundo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mundo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bow tie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mundo!
Oh, six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mundo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mundo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourselves down.
That's right, it's a show your bosses don't want you to listen to. The show that's going to tell you the truth about what's going on in the workplace. So wake the hell up, it's the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here.
Hey, Joe, what do you know?
And we have a lot of stuff to talk about. But first, before we do that, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
J-O-E-V-E-C at bellsouth.net.
All right, once again, I want to welcome all my fans listening in at the White Rose Society. Thanks, Ben Birch, for hosting my archives there. Also, my listeners at rantradio.com, radiopower.org, and cadrenpictures.com. Okay, something here before I continue on with my regular rant. I wanted to make sure people understand this is a pre-recorded show. This is not live. I currently do not have the technical capabilities to do a live show. And really, when you work a regular 40-hour week job and you just do this on the side as best you can, given the fact that I do this all by myself, then you just do it the best way you possibly can do it. And in my case, that is pre-recorded. So when I record the show, I record different segments at different times. And usually for the Thursday show, I try to get a segment done Monday and a segment done Tuesday and then a segment done Wednesday and just add it, get it together so it can be on the servers on Thursday. For rantradio.com in particular. But I try to get a show done every Thursday and every Sunday. Now, the segment following this was actually recorded before this. Okay, the segment following this is a thing with my friend Dave Merrill and I. We were talking about George Tenet resigning and all that other stuff. But, of course, that happened before what was the really big news of the week, which was Ronald Reagan's passing away. And I'm sure until Friday, there's going to be numerous stuff said and written about that. Let me give my own personal observation. I happen to, from a point of view of looking at him on television and listening to his speeches, I really liked listening to him speak. And he did have an optimism and a charisma about him and a very grandfatherly way about him. And it was, you know, I really did enjoy listening to his speech, to him give a speech. I didn't care for him much during press conferences. And, in fact, later on, I used to I enjoyed watching his press conferences later on because he went off the wall on so many different areas. And maybe that was the Alzheimer's kicking in, or maybe it just because he wasn't as quick on his feet. He was better with a prepared speech. But he was an intelligent guy, and he certainly had a vision of America, but beneath that veneer of gentleness and kindness that, you know, he's a kindly, grandfatherly old man, like I said, seethed a kind of hatred. A hatred for the poor, a hatred for people who thought that they were just getting a free ride. You know, this was proven in his policies. He had a lot of anti-worker policy. He was very anti-union. And how he treated the air traffic controllers' attempted strike, was a perfect example. I mean, it didn't sound the death knell to unions in this country, but it pretty much put the first nails in the coffin. Excuse me a second. A little drink there. a lot of the policies that are going on today are basically extensions of what happened under Reagan. Let's not forget, as much as you want to talk about the man personally, and by the way, before I forget, my condolences to Mrs. Reagan and to the Reagan family on their loss. I'm sure he was a decent person, you know, to talk to and just to be on one-on-one with, but maybe he shouldn't have been president. He was very popular. Certainly in 1984, he had a huge landslide victory as far as electoral votes are concerned anyway. But there was the movement that he helped spawn in this country, and he was really at the forefront of it because the conservative movement was only really just beginning in 1980. They didn't have the total power that they have now, and they have it now because of what happened back then. And an extension of the things that we're going through now, it comes from what he was doing in the 80s and in the late 70s and all that stuff, and what the conservative movement was doing. He was their first big figurehead president, and they really, really deify him. And I try to be nice, but then I also remember how they treated the Wellstone funeral. Or it wasn't a funeral. I shouldn't say funeral. The Wellstone memorial service, because the funeral was something different. And, of course, you know, Reagan's passing away is not a really big surprise. I don't mean to sound callous or anything. It's just he was 93 years old, and he had Alzheimer's, and he had, you know, other diseases. So it's not unexpected. But if you look back at it and you look at the fact that he helped Osama bin Laden get started, maybe not directly. They did directly support Saddam Hussein. He did sell weapons to people who were enemies of us, people who were our enemies, and used the profits from that to fund terrorist groups in Central America simply because they were fighting, you know, the Sandinistas. They so hated the Sandinistas that they had their little death squads out there. And these were the people that Reagan called the moral equivalent of our founding fathers. And these were people that had murdered nuns and children and other people. So while he really just put a nice face on what were some really, really nasty things. There were a couple of columns that I thought were very good dealing with Reagan. And one was by Juan Cole of JuanCole.com. And he had some very good things to say about that. And let me read what he said. He wrote. He wrote, "Reagan had an ability to project a kindly image and was well-liked personally by virtually everyone who knew him, apparently. But it always struck me that he was a mean man. I remember learning in the late 60s of the impact Michael Harrington's The Other America had on Johnson's war on poverty. Harrington demonstrated that in the early 1960s there was still hunger in places like Appalachia deriving from poverty. It was hard for middle-class Americans to believe, and Lyndon Johnson, who represented many poor people himself, was galvanized to take action. I remember seeing a tape of Reagan speaking in California from that era. He said that he had heard some asserted there was hunger in America. He said it sarcastically. He said, 'Sure it is. Sure there is. They're dieting,' or words to that effect. Here, this handsome Hollywood millionaire making fun of people so poor that they sometimes went to bed hungry seemed to me monstrous. I remember his wealthy audience of suburbanites going wild with laughter and applause. I'm still not entirely sure what was going on there. Did they think Harrington's and similar studies were lies? Did they blame the poor for being poor and resent demands on them in the form of a few tax dollars to address their hunger? And so on and so forth." I thought that was a very good statement. And the New York Times' Paul Krugman, also, since the right wing is going to basically misinform you about Reagan's history and how much he cut taxes and all that, Paul Krugman reminded us of a few facts. Let's read from Mr. Krugman's article, The Great Taxer, which was on June 8th. Over the course of the week, we'll be hearing a lot about Ronald Reagan, much of it false. A number of news sources have already proclaimed Mr. Reagan the most popular president of modern times. In fact, though Mr. Reagan was very popular in 84 and 85, he spent the latter part of his presidency under the shadow of the Iran-Contra scandal. Bill Clinton had a slightly higher average Gallup approval rating and a much higher rating during his last 2 years in office. We're also sure to hear that Mr. Reagan presided over an unmatched economic boom. Again, not true. The economy grew slightly faster under President Clinton, and according to the Congressional Budget Office, the after-tax income of a typical family adjusted for inflation rose more than twice as much from 1992 to 2000 as it did from 1980 to 1988. But Ronald Reagan does hold a special place in the annals of tax policy, and not just as the patron saint of tax cuts. To his credit, he was more pragmatic and responsible than that. He followed his huge 1981 tax cut with two large tax increases. In fact, no peacetime president, and this is a good one, I like this line, no peacetime president has raised taxes so much on so many people. This is not a criticism. The tale of those increases tells you a lot about what was right with President Reagan's leadership and what was wrong with the leadership of George W. Bush. The first Reagan tax increase came in 1982, and by then it was clear that the budget projections used to justify the 1981 tax cut were wildly optimistic. In response, Mr. Reagan agreed to a sharp rollback of corporate tax cuts and a smaller rollback of individual income tax cuts. Overall, the 82 tax increase undid about one-third of the 1981 cut. As a share of gross domestic product, the increase was substantially larger than Mr. Clinton's 1993 tax increase. Bob Dole, I remember calling that the largest tax increase in history, and Republicans were screaming bloody murder about how it would destroy the economy. The 1993 budget accord, by the way, was what allowed the prosperity to continue. It had perhaps already begun. You can make that argument, but the 1993 budget accord, according to even Alan Greenspan, who was hardly a liberal Democrat, was the key ingredient for increasing the prosperity, raising the stock market up to tremendous levels, and keeping prosperity going for, you know, the full term of Mr. Clinton's presidency. And that was a very, very important and big thing, and every single Republican voted against it. In fact, it was a deadlock tie in the Senate. Al Gore had to cast a deciding vote, and that's what passed it. And, you know, everything that the Republicans said would happen about that budget was wrong. And they used that, of course, to gain power in 1994, and then proceeded to take credit for everything that happened since then. Republicans are real good at that, taking credit for things that they have no right to take credit for and blaming people for things that they have no right to blame people for. Don't you just love Republicans? Mr. Krugman goes on to say that the contrast with President Bush is obvious. President Reagan, confronted with evidence that his tax cuts were fiscally irresponsible, changed course. President Bush, on the other hand, confronted with similar evidence, has pushed for even more tax cuts. For many middle and low-income families, the tax increase that Mr. Reagan had more than undid any gains from Mr. Reagan's income tax cut. Okay, let me go through that again. Mr. Reagan's second tax increase was also motivated by a sense of responsibility, or at least that's the way it seemed at the time. I'm referring, Mr. Krugman said, to the Social Security Reform Act of 1983, which followed the recommendations of a commission led by Alan Greenspan. Its key provision was an increase in the payroll tax that pays for Social Security and Medicare and hospital insurance. For many middle and low-income families, this tax increase more than undid any gains for Mr. Reagan's income tax cuts. In 1980, according to the Congressional Budget Office estimates, the middle-income families with children paid 8.2% of their income in income taxes, 9.5% in payroll taxes. By 88, the income tax share was down to 6.6%, but the payroll tax share was up to 11.8%, and the combined burden was up, not down. So don't let them fool you into, you know, thinking that Reagan was the biggest tax cutter of all. He simply was not. His domestic policies were faulty, and his foreign policy was even worse. But he was better than George W. Bush. And I realize that's not saying much, but he was better than George W. Bush. I want to try not to be too mean or callous about that. I happen to have liked Reagan personally. And I want to say a special note to Beach on. In the comment on the blog, he wrote that how he, one time he hated Reagan, but then he grew up. You know, I really dislike that condescending attitude, Beachon. You know, don't tell me, first of all, don't tell me that I hate Reagan. I don't hate Reagan. I hate the policies that he had, or I dislike the policies that he had. It's more than just a disagreement. I think they did a lot of damage to the country in the long run and continue to damage the country. But I don't hate him personally, so don't go around putting friggin' words in my mouth. Second of all, if growing up means callously accepting all the death and murder that we're doing in Iraq, if growing up means pissing on poor people and treating people who are morally, economically advantaged than you are like crap, then I'll tell you something, I don't fucking want to grow up. If that's what growing up means, I don't want any fucking part of it. We're all in this together. And until you right-wingers understand that, and until you stop acting like a bunch of superior, know-it-all jackasses, then there's no reason for us to have any attempt at intelligent discourse, because you're not capable of it. So save your condescending little words, Beachon. You're just wrong. I know enough about you to know that this is just another little phase that you're going through. And you're acting like someone who's on a big diet and can't talk about anything else. So, you don't intimidate me, you don't scare me, you can be condescending all you want, but I think it's you who have a lot of growing up to do, and all the other people who blindly support Reagan and who blindly support Bush without speaking about things realistically. You know, I try very hard to speak in practical matters about these issues, but it's absolutely impossible when you're dealing with right-wingers. Anyway, let's take a little break, and we'll be right back with my friend Dave Merrill on the Cup of Joe radio show. Sam, play us out.
We'll be right back with more on the Cup of Joe radio show.
Welcome to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. Well, well, well. We don't have time to talk about the hypocrisy of his personal life, nor do we have sufficient space to get into details about his hypocritical business dealings with China, nor do we have time to delve into the endless hypocrisy of the moral values versus trashy content clash that surrounds his tabloid paper empire. All of that would take far too long. When you're talking about media baron mogul Rupert Murdoch, you need to focus on one hypocrisy at a time. So let's just take a page from Al Franken and utter three words synonymous with Murdoch's Fox News: fair and balanced. What could be more Orwellian than to set up a TV news operation that is a shill for the Republican Party, headed by a former, and some would say current de facto, GOP operative, Roger Ailes, and claim it's fair and balanced? It's so much doublespeak, as the title of a documentary on the media notes, Orwell rolls in his grave. Fox News is the nemesis of an informed democracy. It provides the deceptive claim of being fair and balanced, while at the same time being driven by a right-wing political agenda that is unfair and unbalanced. When it comes to governmental issues and international affairs, Fox News is as unbiased as Dick Cheney. In fact, Dick Cheney commented a few weeks back that Fox News is the only network that accurately reports the news. Ha! That's like a John testifying on the virginal sweetness of their favorite street whore. Murdoch prides himself on packaging content to appeal to the masses, but when you cover weak old rotten fish in glitter, hey, it's still rotten fish. Maybe Fox News has enough faux pundit pearls and news anchor diamels to numb the minds of the typical Republican Kool-Aid drinking voter, but the rest of America, after watching a few minutes of the network, squelches a gag reflex and can taste the bile spewing from the tube. Fox News is the epicenter of the merger of entertainment, technological innovation, and propaganda. It's a powerful narcotic that is currently in the hands of the forces of darkness, interested in nothing more than dismantling democracy through control of the media message. Fair and balanced? How about anti-democracy and pro-right-wing garbage wrapped inside the opportunistic and exploitative disguise of an American flag? Rupert Murdoch, you are the wizard behind the Orwellian birth of a one-party media where news and bias become indistinguishable. You are also long overdue to receive your much-merited recognition as the BuzzFlash GOP Hypocrite of the Week. Until next week, just remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com: so many Republican hypocrites, so little time. Catch up with you soon.
Hi, kids. George Lowe, voice of TV's beloved Space Ghost. You are barking a happy tune with my close personal friend, the lovely Joe Vecchio, on the Cup O' Joe Radio Show.
And welcome back to the Cup O' Joe Radio Show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. That URL, once again, is cupojoe.blogspot.com. And you can email me at joevec@bellsouth.net. Write to me. Write to me. You'll never write to me. I always call you. You always say you're going to listen. And you're right. No, you never write to me. So write to me. Tell me what you think of the show.
To be in the radical middle, do I have to like skateboard and have a sort of a crazy haircut and say things like, dude?
No.
Good.
Because I'm part of the radical middle. By the way, the voice you're listening to is my friend Dave Marilyn. He is in the lush facilities of Joe of Enterprises Studios here. Hi, Dave.
Palatial Recording Studio.
And we were doing Audio Hell, which will be available on the website shortly, if it isn't already available. We really don't know what the hell we're doing, at least as far as time is concerned. But while I had him in the studio, I thought I'd drag him into talking about the events of the day. And the big thing, it actually happened, was it yesterday or the day before yesterday? When I'm busy with work, sometimes I lose track.
I think it was the day before yesterday.
And George Tenet, chief of the CIA, resigned. And right on top of that, we found out the number two man.
Yeah, that was this morning CIA I saw resigned. That.
Now, it's so obvious that he was basically forced out.
Fell on his sword.
Oh, and you wonder why these people do that, why they're protecting Mr. Bush, is basically what they're doing.
I think Tenet wanted out. I think he's... we've had a lot of administration. Not a lot. But we've had several high-profile members of his administration just sort of say, well, I'm out of here. See ya. Like Christy Whitman, you know, who's one of the few Republicans that anybody has any respect for.
But, you know,
well, see you later.
Gore called for a whole bunch of them to resign. He had that speech, and he said, get out. You should resign. You've failed your country. It's
well,
time to change.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I think Rumsfeld should stay right where he is, doing the great job he's doing until November 2nd. After November 2nd, he should resign.
How many pardons do you think W is going to have between if he loses this election?
He's going to have a whole raft of pens.
Now, you see, this is what I keep talking about this coming election, because I look at it, it's like playing the Lakers in the playoffs in basketball. If you want to beat the Lakers in the playoffs, you're going to have to beat them by 20 or 30 points, because the NBA is going to cheat their asses off to make sure they go further. And for the Republicans, you have to beat them by so fucking much that it's going to overcome the massive cheating.
Well, this time especially.
Yeah, especially because, and even the mainstream media is starting to pick up on the Diebold voting machine now. And that was, you know, not too long ago, that was all conspiracy theory shit. And now it's
now
all
it's
over the place.
Conspiracy fact.
It's been that way for a long time. I mean, the fucking guy who runs the company that makes the machines is a big Republican supporter.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's like, what the hell? And can you be more obvious?
He was actually a Republican legislator up in, I want to say he's from Illinois.
I don't think he was, Midwest. I think he was like a lobbyist or something. But he actually guaranteed that a certain city or a certain state was going to go for Bush.
Well, I can guarantee it.
So
because I run all the machines.
But we have now with Tenet gone, and I forget the other guy's name, but the number two man gone. That's a huge hole. I mean, it's one thing to
he's
say,
a
okay,
spy. We shouldn't know his name.
Well, but the thing about it is, usually when the number one man leaves, the number two man can pretty much take over. But now both of them.
This wasn't the number two guy. This was the guy in charge of covert operations.
Okay, where's John O'Neill when you need him? You know, he died in the World Trade Center. He's the one that should have been in charge of
That's
the whole
true.
Deal. And he's the one to try to let him know about a lot of the shit that was going down.
Well, to be honest, I don't really... That's what irritates me, is that I don't believe you can fault... Well, you can fault the CIA for this, but the responsibility for all the serious problems that have been happening, it's not Tenet's fault.
No, it's not.
I didn't really want to see him go. I think what we need... And I do agree with this, is that we need some sort of a... Of an overriding organization to coordinate intelligence from all our intelligence.
Well, that's what Homeland Security is supposed to be, but of course the Bush people are just basically using it as a tool to bludgeon their political opponents.
Did you see that thing where now every time you buy a house, they're going to run your name through a list to make sure you're not a terrorist? And you have to pay for that, too. It's like $30 a name.
Did you hear about this thing? This kid was protesting outside of an armed forces recruiting station. I think it was in Philadelphia or Boston or someplace. And he basically stood on a cardboard or a wooden crate like a peach crate or something. And he had the same, like, the plastic and the bag over his head. Yeah. And he had, like, the same thing, the famous picture of the prisoner.
He was standing
just out there like that. Didn't say a word. Just stood outside the recruitment office like that. And they basically come and took his ass away. They came and took – they arrested his ass and they took him away. And they didn't even tell him what charge. They just took his ass away. I mean, you can't even think about, you know.
I saw that on the – there was a painting on the cover of Time I saw in the airport. And you know that every art school in the country, that's going to be the – every sensitive sophomore art painting student is going to be painting that this guy with the thing over his head standing on a box.
It just, it's gotten Orwellian. There was one – well, it's been Orwellian for a long time. But there was an instance where you're talking about art. There was a school out in Kansas or someplace like that.
Yeah, I heard all about that. Yeah, they had a poetry slam and they fired the guy and all this stuff.
But there was also a thing.
The principal is just like, no, you can't do this. And apparently this high school has a military advisor. And I'm like, what in the world does a military advisor do at a high school? Like either he's the recruiting guy there to recruit high school students or he's the ROTC instructor. And either way, he should not have any direction at all in school policy.
But the strange thing is that, well, not the strange thing, but the thing that really pisses me off is that they censored one teacher simply because that teacher refused to censor what the poet
exactly.
the poet was saying. It's like, you can't, you know.
This was in a poetry slam that was off school property, by the way. This is not on school property.
So it's, you wonder what this
well,
country's
you know,
coming
stuff
to.
Stuff like this is always going on in high school. The rights of high school students for free expression is always under attack.
The kid who wore the Pepsi shirt, the Coke
Pepsi
Day.
Shirt during Coke Day.
That was
now. What I want to know is what the fuck is going on, and I use the word fuck very precisely. What the fuck is going on with fast food in the goddamn motherfucking high schools? Okay, why are fast food companies allowed to feed our children in high school? Why are there Coke machines accessible to students in high schools? When I went to high school, you could not have Coca-Cola for lunch in high school.
Well,
you couldn't
all,
have it. You couldn't bring it.
It's all part of the corporate invasion. And this is part of what fascism is. It's corporate control because
it's corporations in lockstep with government.
They're inundating these kids with these corporate. I mean, you know, when McDonald's first came out in the 50s and 60s, they were very, very smart in how they did their commercial. They aimed their commercials towards children. So that not only did they get the kids, to get the kids.
Well, children
to
parents. And they said, parents, this is a nice, clean place to eat.
Right. But the thing about it is, when those kids grew up, they started taking their kids to McDonald's because that's where they went when they were kids.
Yep.
And
long term.
It was now. I don't necessarily have a problem with that strategy, but putting them in the schools, having corporations pay for educational stuff that's going on.
No.
And a lot of it is simply because the school budgets are cut down so much.
You know what we need? You know how we have separation of church and state in this country? We need a separation of corporation and state. Is
there
what we need.
Well, we got to stop all. I've called for just no corporate donations to politicians or political action committees
at
all.
And I might point out that in this country, corporations don't pay taxes. My bank, Wachovia Bank, has all sorts of convoluted gymnastics to avoid paying taxes. They make millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars, and they don't pay taxes. And, of course, every time you see the libertarians talking, they're like, well, we need to reduce taxes on the citizens, blah, 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 this. We're paying too many taxes. You know, why don't we get these corporations start paying their share?
And then I was going over my taxes the other day, and I was just seeing what the percentage was. And I pay something like 23-24% if you take out everything of all of my deductions of paycheck. 23% is gone. One quarter of it is gone. And there were some corporations whose annual tax rate is like in the negatives because they get so much government.
Yeah, they get kickbacks.
There was
it's
a big
welfare,
thing.
Ladies and gentlemen. This is welfare, corporate welfare.
There was a thing about fucking Walmart. You know, there was several news about all the subsidies that Walmart gets. Now, granted, maybe when they were just beginning and wanted to build, you know, to build an employee base, and that's fine. But they're the biggest fucking company in the world right now.
Well, they don't have to pay taxes.
And they don't. Not only do they not pay as many taxes as they should, I'm sure they pay a little bit. What they get back in subsidies makes up for it. So if you factor that in, and of course, you know what they're just basically doing is lower the bar for employment.
Oh yeah, you know, of course, this is all about. Well, we need to get these people in here to have businesses and create jobs. It's like, well, great, a job at Walmart.
You know, Franklin Roosevelt once said that any company that can only make a profit by screwing their employees over. He didn't use the word phraseology, but any company that made a profit like that didn't deserve to do business in America.
Certainly not.
And unfortunately, that is the rule rather than the exception. You see it every day in all the little bullshit you have to put up with. Dave, when you get up to Canada, I want to get a report from you in one way, shape, or form about how the workers are treated in Canada.
Well, I'll find that out firsthand, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, actually, I wouldn't mind. It's a little too late for it now, but I'd like to talk to Shandel about that, your wife, because she's lived in Canada all her life. So.
Well, no, actually, she was born in Vancouver, and she lived about 15 years down in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And then she moved up to Toronto to go to school, and she lived in Toronto for about another 12, 15 years.
So she has a good idea of the big differences
She's worked several different jobs.
So she knows how people are treated in... Across the countries.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because I am moving to Canada in 3 weeks. And when I mention that to people, I've had several people say, well, you know, I'm the rare animal. I'm a gun-owning Democrat.
It's not that rare.
I know it's not that rare. So I sold my rifle. It's an old military rifle. And I sold it because I don't want to go through the red tape of trying to get it through the border. And I was talking to one friend of mine who was like, well, of course you couldn't have that in Canada. Like, no, you can own any gun you want in Canada. And the myth that the right wing in this country likes to portray is that we are the only nation that allows citizens to own firearms.
Isn't it Switzerland, isn't it, like, mandatory?
It's mandatory to own firearms.
See,
every male is, you're in the reserve.
Right. But you see, the Swiss practice gun control.
You're issued, yeah, exactly. These people are trained military people that have guns. They're not, well, I guess get a machine gun. But the thing about Canada is you can own anything you want. You have to register it, of course. And, of course, there are people who are claiming that this is some sort of terrible infringement on their rights. But you can own anything you want, any gun you want. And most of the rest of the world, you know, you fill out a little paperwork, you own a gun. Big deal.
But at least you get a little training. I mean, I've always said that I don't really give a shit if everybody in the States is armed. But I think as a citizen, we have a right to be sure as much as possible that everybody who owns a weapon at least knows how to fucking use it.
Certainly.
I don't think requiring you to know what you're doing is an infringement upon your rights.
You know, I'm not so concerned about people who commit crimes with guns, because people who want to commit crimes are going to commit crimes. Mm-hmm. They're going to figure out a way to do it. But it's all the children in this country that are the senseless death of children through firearms. Through some guy has a gun, leaves it lying around, kid picks it up, bang, he's dead.
And it's a key misinterpretation of the Second Amendment. Well-regulated militia. That part is conveniently ignored.
You know, until the children quit being killed by guns that mommy and daddy leave lying around because they're morons, when that day happens, fine, great, you can own all the guns you want. That day hasn't happened yet. It's never going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen with humans the way they currently are anyway. So,
the other thing that's about Canada right now is that I'm getting my absentee ballot, so I will be able to vote. If you're an American that does not live in the continental United States, pretty much for any reason, as long as you're still an American citizen, you're eligible to vote in the national election.
Now, how are you going to maintain your U.S. citizenship?
I believe so.
And do you have to pay taxes or anything like that?
I hope not.
Now you,
I don't know.
Well, I know because I've done this before. When I worked for Ford Aerospace and I was working in Italy, I paid no income tax that year that I worked there.
Yeah.
Because if you're working for an American company overseas, you're exempt from income tax. I don't know, but
I would believe as long as I'm not working for an American company and I'm not getting paid in American dollars, I ain't paying you. You can come get me, IRS. Come get me.
Well, they
can
take
money
away your citizenship, probably.
Oh, no. Well, I'll stay in freaking Canada then. Jeez.
It seems to me to be a much better place. Where is this country headed? I'm still trying to figure this out.
Yeah,
I'm still trying to figure out because, you know, we've got this election coming up, if you can call it that. And there's still part of me, and it's hard for me to imagine that they would pull this, but it's hard for me to imagine not doing it because these people are so power crazy that they're willing to do anything.
Well, you think they'll throw it?
Not just,
I would. If I was George W. Bush,
I would. Not just throw it, but cancel it.
Yeah, yeah. If I was George W. Bush right now, and thank God I'm not, but if I was, what I would do is I would manufacture a terrorist event and cancel the election. I would make that grab.
And if that happens, I want to point out right now that the United States has never canceled a federal election in its entire history. Even during the Civil War.
That's true.
We held an election. And in fact, they were pressing Lincoln to cancel it. And Lincoln said straight out, he said, no, if we cancel it, that means the Confederates have won.
That means the terrorists have already won.
So, you know, if they cancel it, and you know, the thing about it is the dim bulbs in this country would probably go for it. You know,
sure. In the name of freedom, of course.
As I said in one of my posts a long time ago, I said Rome stopped becoming a republic and became an empire because its citizens no longer wanted the responsibility of self-government. And we've reached that point where we just don't want that responsibility. We're interested in fucking American Idol and, you know, what the latest bullshit with Britney Spears and naming fucking Julia Roberts twins. You know, that's
Julia Roberts had twins?
Yeah, and there's a big there was a big thing in the paper.
Well, good for
about,
her.
See, Dave pays attention to the really important stuff and not the marginal bullshit that everybody else focuses on.
That poor woman deserves some happiness.
There was
in her
a
life.
Big thing that was fucking front page on the Atlanta Journal-Constitution about what should we name? You know, let's have a poll to see what we should name Julia Roberts kids.
Well, this is the, you know, this
how about
is the
filthy
Journal
and fucking rich?
this is the you know.
Urinal constipation.
I don't have a bird, so I don't need birdcage liner. And I don't buy a lot of fish, so I don't buy the Journal Constitution. I read it in, you know, for free, but I don't buy
it. If someone brings it at work, and my coworker generally brings it at work.
Boy, you know, what's awesome is the Gwinnett paper, because there are some columnists in the Gwinnett paper that are just like, well, the flowers out back are looking really nice today, and it's just stream of consciousness middle age ranting. What is with all the children and their loud rap music? What is with the clothes and the hair of these young people today?
These kids today with their hair and
their
clothes.
Hair and their clothes, you know?
And their feet attached to legs. What's with that? In my day, the feet were attached right to the knees, and we walked funny, and we liked it that way.
What frightens me, you know, I was in Chicago. I was at an anime show. I was surrounded by thousands of kids who were obsessed with Japanese cartoons. And I felt like every minute I was there, like, screaming at these people, you know, this country is at war right now. We have a retard in the White House who doesn't know what he's doing. We, you know, this country is headed straight for the toilet, and you people are like, wow, look at this DVD I bought. Hooray!
Well, you know, those kids will have a lot more to worry about if Bush gets in for another 4 years.
We get the draft, man.
They'll be trading DVDs in foxholes in Iran.
Well, they are, actually. A lot of the military, we have a lot of people involved in the anime scene that are, you know, they're in the military, you know, like when you were in the military,
sure.
Anime people. And these are kids that all have DVD players that are small, they can carry with them. They're in their camp, they're in their barracks watching DVDs, watching anime.
Oh, sure. You know, when I was, my son, James, was going to go into the Air Force, he was worried that nobody there would be, like, into video games or shit like that. I said, are you kidding me? I said, what the hell do you think half of us did on the weekends? When I was in, it was before video games really came out big. I mean, we had a few of them. But for me, it was like Dungeons and Dragons and shit, you know? A lot of military people play D&D or some version of that.
Let's face it, they're nerds.
Sure.
Well, military is a viable career option for any nerd.
Well, but the thing about it is it's a way to kill a weekend.
That too.
You know, and there's a lot of, especially if you're in a foreign country. Although I was not one of those types of people. There were some people who just wouldn't go off the base at all. I mean, their whole life was, you know, they go to their job and they play video games or what their version of it, or watch movies or play D&D the whole weekend, and it never leave the base. Me, I was all over the place.
That's ridiculous.
We went all over the place in Japan. I mean, I could see if you're in fucking bumfuck Oklahoma somewhere, in some base out there where there's nothing out there to see to begin with. But when you're, you know, if you're in Germany,
you're in a foreign country.
Yeah.
Go see the country.
Oh, Jesus, Japan is a beautiful country. And people didn't even, you know, there were some people who never left the fucking base. And I'm like, what is wrong with you? So
I can't warrant it, as they say. But no, I have no honest idea. I don't know where this country's headed. People are very frightened in this country. They're becoming more xenophobic. They're becoming suspicious of everything that is not American. And this includes, there's one thing I've really noticed around here is an amazing degree of really the issue of immigration is really becoming a hot button issue in the South right now. And it's something that everybody I've spoken to in the last year has just become, what is with all these Mexicans?
Well, they're doing the work that you don't want to do.
They're doing the work that you do not want to do.
You know, that's generally my line to people who get down on me because I won't work overtime where I work and because I don't really kill myself on the job. And I say, you know, there's Mexican guys who will do everything that you do, and they'll do it for $2 an hour. So if that's the bar that you want to set for yourself, you just go right the fuck ahead. But leave me the hell alone.
Well, you know, as an American whose ancestors were not born on this continent, it's kind of hypocritical to be against immigration.
Well, especially, I'm only, you know, I never think about it this way, but I'm only a second generation American.
Exactly.
My grandfather came here from Sicily.
I think what we're seeing a lot of the anti-immigration talk is really, I don't like these people because they're funny, they look funny, they speak a funny language, they don't eat the food I eat, they don't like the things I like, they're strange, they are the other.
You know what gets me is how shocked everybody is by or pretends to be about certain events, like the prison thing. You know, why are we shocked that this thing, these things happen? Americans love to treat people like this. We love beating the crap out of people.
Well, as Rush Limbaugh was saying, it's like fraternity hate.
It's like a fraternity. But, you know, even so, we love kicking the shit out of people who are down. I mean, it wasn't that long ago.
You know why they love this? Because they're afraid.
Because they're afraid.
Because all these kids who committed these acts in the Abu Ghraib prison, they are deathly afraid. Because when they walk out of that prison, somebody shoots at them.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who looks just like these people they're torturing.
Yeah,
this is what killed us in Vietnam.
But they do that in this country, too. I mean, I was watching a report on the news
about prison, this. On prison?
An American prisoner, this mentally retarded guy. And he was just, you know, he was acting up a little bit, so they stripped his ass naked and forced him to walk through the hallways and put him in a room and throw him in cold showers and shit.
You know why the guards do this? Because they're afraid. Because they're surrounded by people who hate them and want to kill them. I wouldn't do, and in fact, we were down in South Georgia recently, last week, and we're looking at the local paper, and some South Georgia counties looking for correctional officers, pay $10 an hour. And I'm like, I wouldn't do that for $100 an hour.
Oh, shit, no. I knew a guy used to work for that. He quit because he was tired of it. He was actually a counselor, and he was trying to help prisoners. And all they were doing was fucking them over. They weren't interested in, you know, what they were going to be after they were in prison. They were just more interested in, you know, get your ass in jail.
There's no such thing as penology in this country now. It is strictly punishment.
It is really...
And punishment and containment. It's like if you would spend a nickel trying to get these people educated and get them back out on the streets where they can become worthwhile members of society, our crime rate would go down and our society would be better.
And you know something? I heard people say, the other thing that people say, well, you know, look at what they did to Nick Berg. And you know something? There's some funny aspects of that fucking Nick Berg video.
We're going to be finding out a lot of really interesting things about the Nick Berg case.
But the thing about this is, I'm not definitely saying it's true. But there, you know, the conspiracies are out that there was a CIA thing.
Yeah.
That they killed the guy, because there's a lot of really weird shit about that video, and I want to get into that in a second. But the thing about it is, it's one of those things where if you found out that it was the CIA, it wouldn't surprise you.
No, not at all.
Because this is the type of shit that they do, and it, you know, there are a couple of things that bug me. Number one, people talked about this. There's no blood coming out of that head.
Yeah.
That head looked completely drained.
Well, you know, I'm not a doctor. I haven't seen a lot of beheading videos, so I don't have a lot of comparison.
Well,
they
cut his head off screen, didn't they? They didn't cut it.
I don't know. I'm not going to watch it. Jesus.
The second thing is, the guy who they say did it is a terrorist who obviously wanted to take credit for it because he gave his name. He said, "I am so and so." I forget the guy's name.
Al-Zakari, I think.
Yeah, and then he said, "I am this guy, and I'm doing this because of the prison thing, basically." And so.
Which sounds really fishy to me.
Well, the thing about it is, not only is he taking the time to identify himself, but he also knows that we know what he looks like. So,
and yet, in the video,
and
he's wearing a mask.
He's wearing a hood. Why would he wear a hood?
If we already know what he looks
this
like.
This guy also has a leg missing. And apparently has not, according to intelligence reports, well, however well you can count those, he has not taken to the false leg very well.
Yeah.
And from what I hear, he's walking around pretty nimbly.
Well, I think what we have to remember when we're dealing with the Middle East, well, we're dealing with anywhere in the world in an intelligence capacity. These areas are full of little cells, all of whom hate each other. It's full of revolutionary groups, all of whom are opposing each other.
The Judean People's Front and the People's Front of Judea.
Exactly. They all are working against each other and against us.
Mm-hmm.
So we may be dealing with their triple reverse black operation type deal.
It's a really, really fucked up situation, and we should never have inserted ourselves into it. You know, it was Jefferson and not Washington who talked about the dangers of entangling yourself.
Foreign entanglements.
But, you know, obviously it's
Washington talked about that, too.
It's a global environment. And you have to deal with it, but you don't have to go in there and make things worse.
I think at this point, even the people who agreed we should have started this war, even they at this point should be saying we are going about this in the wrong way.
You're hearing a lot of that now. You are hearing a lot of that now.
If you felt good about the war from day one, which shouldn't have because the evidence was so false, at this point you should be going, hey, we're doing this wrong. What's wrong with you people in Washington? We need to fire you and get some people in here to know what they're doing.
And if you listen to our media, the whole thing is like, the president is just shocked to hear that Ahmad Chalabi was...
The president was also shocked to find out that 2 plus 2 equals 4,
God,
and not like, 5, as had previously been reported.
Oh, we were given bad information. We didn't push you to go into this, as if they didn't want to go into Iraq from the very...
Why does anyone believe anything the administration says at all?
You know, why does... You know,
that's my question. Their credibility is zero.
And the same way with the people who were pro-war. Listen, you were telling us that we were wrong all along, and the fact of the matter is you were wrong. So as far as I'm concerned, you don't even have
you're
a
wrong.
Right to say anything anymore.
You're wrong. You're wrong, and we're right. End of story. What else are you wrong about? You know, that's the next question.
Well, you know, there's still people, and we have a mutual friend whose name I will not mention, who's still on that bandwagon. He's like, so long as Bush is killing people who were trying to kill me, he's got my vote. That's the attitude.
Well, you know, the crazy part about it is these people in Iraq weren't trying to kill
us. But you see, try to explain that. Try to explain that to them. They're not, because they're fanatics. You know, they're completely fucked in the head. Either that, or they're just saying that to piss you off or to get you going, in which case they're not worth listening to either.
Well, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Anyway, Dave, I want to thank you for being here. We went on a little longer than we expected, but that's cool. It's always good to fill a little time. It makes my job a lot easier.
Well, you know, the sponsors and their ads are going to be...
You know, well, the thing about it is, you know, I do
you
the show.
You actually have sponsors and ads on the show?
No. I do have my little clips, but I had to keep it down to an hour for the people who are scheduling.
Well, why don't
show
you just
regularly.
Like compress it? So I'll talk like this all the time.
I don't think so. I want to
be awesome.
I want to have people listening. By the way, I mentioned this to you earlier, and I want to make this announcement here. I got a call from the Laura Flanders Show, from the associate producer of the Laura Flanders Show. And they do on every Sunday evening from 9 to 10, they do like a talk show roundtable type of deal. And they invited me to be – this is on Air America, which is Al Franken and Janine Garofalo and the Queen, Randy Rhodes Network. And I'm going to be on the air hopefully next Sunday, not this Sunday, but next Sunday. So that ought to be interesting. I don't know who yet will be – the people who are going to be on the roundtable with me, apart from the host herself, but that ought to be very interesting. So, but anyway, Dave, thanks you for being in the studio.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to be here
and
vent.
And good luck in Canada. And send me some stuff. Email me from some things, and you know, keep me posted on what's going on. And get a list of songs together for another Audio Hell, and we'll put something together.
I'll dig through my vinyl, my dusty old vinyl.
Okay, take care, Sam. Play us out.
The Joe Radio Show will be right back.
And welcome back to the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, I want to thank all of my listeners at rantradio.com, at radiopower.org, at cadronpictures.com, and of course, my good friend Ben Birch, hosting my archives at the WhiteRoseSociety.org. That's WhiteRoseSociety.org. My URL for the blog is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and you can email me at joevec@bellsouth.net. And of course, I encourage people to email me and let me know how things are going. What was going on today at work? Well, we had a couple of situations going. We've got a new guy who's been there for the last week. So his name is Raymond. Very nice young man, 22 years old. I kind of feel bad for him because if, you know, Bush gets in 2004, the odds are he'll be drafted. Now, he works for Randstad. And it was kind of funny because we came in this morning or this afternoon for work. And he was sitting there at a table with his hands, you know, with his head on a table and his hands were low. And it's like, yo, are you tired? And he goes, yeah. I said, how can you possibly be tired, dude? You are 22 years old. You ought to have enough energy to not sleep for like 2 weeks at 22. I'm tired. I'm 42 friggin' years old. I'm tired. So we were getting on his case a little bit. He's a real nice guy. We've been having some relatively uneventful days at the shop lately, but there's a lot of the same old BS going on. Actually, we had a small incident with our forklift driver who stacked some of the pallets up with some of the parts a little too close to the line. and it accidentally hooked one of the big boxes and started dragging it away, and it probably would have continued to pick at that while it, and eventually maybe knocked the pallet over. And that's a lot of weight to be knocking over. Some of these pallets weigh, oh, upwards of a ton. So, you know, it can be real heavy. And this particular one didn't weigh more than probably a couple hundred pounds, but each part fallen from like maybe 10 or 15 feet would have done some serious damage. Now, my coworker Dave, he brings in the newspaper every day. Let me make it very clear, by the way, that I do not purchase the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, or as I call it, the urinal constipation. It is really, really a piece of shit newspaper. It is the worst piece of shit newspaper for a city of any of this size that you can imagine. And the only reason it even manages to stay in business at all is because they spend more of their time focusing on maintaining their monopoly on the print media in this city than they do in actually putting out a decent product. And it's owned by Cox, which owns God knows how many radio stations and television stations in town. As soon as they lax the laws a little bit, they snatch up another one. They own WSB AM. They have at least one FM station. They have 680, which now it's a sports talk again. They got WSB TV and a couple other TV stations. I mean, they're just all over the place here. Cox Communications. And, you know, the Journal-Constitution used to be two newspapers, the Atlanta Journal and the Atlanta Constitution, but really it was still only one newspaper. They used to do the Constitution in the morning and the Journal in the afternoon. But the only thing really different about those two were the editorial pages and the comics. Otherwise, the paper was exactly the same. But there was this kind of pretense that the Journal was the Constitution was the liberal, and that the Journal was conservative. And it's all a bunch of horseshit. It's all produced by the same group of people anyway. And the editors for each one are different, but it's still the same newspaper. And a few years ago, they kind of merged. But anyway, the reason I bring that up is that while I'm on a break or while I'm at lunch or if I'm on a particularly long bathroom break and my stomach the way it is, sometimes that happens. And sometimes I'm just friggin' hiding. I'll admit it. There was like at around 11 o'clock when the night shift people come, I take my last break, which is kind of stupid, really. You take a break at 11 o'clock, you get off at 12. But it's only a 10-minute break, and the night shift people come in, and they're doing all the work anyway. They don't even want you to help out, really. So I'm basically hiding. I hide out in the bathroom for about a half an hour. Sometimes I have to. Usually I wind up having to go anyway for much. At any rate, that's not the point. The point is that I got the newspaper, and I was reading the headlines, which is always the first thing I read in the paper, and they had these big articles about the G8 summit, which is down here in Georgia, off the coast somewhere. I really don't give a rat's ass. And I was looking at the coverage they gave to that, and I just could not believe what I was seeing. Well, actually, I could believe what I was seeing because it's such a piece of shit newspaper. They were running a series of fluff pieces, and a fluff piece, for those who don't know what a fluff piece is, it's just basically a little throwaway piece, stuff like that. Not really hardcore news. It's kind of like, oh, look, this little puppy dog was found in a dumpster on... You know, and everybody's taking care of it, and it's got such loving care. That's a fluff piece, okay? Or if they do something, had like a story about a couple airline pilots taking their last flight, and they brought their families on the plane. That is a fluff piece, okay? I'm sure my sister could clear this up a lot better. In fact, I'm going to try to interview her on the show. She actually is an editor for Newsday newspaper. But they had fluff pieces in about the G8 summit. And they had a few good one-liners aimed at the protesters and at cyberspace in general, because they had a whole article about rumors that are going around about the G8 summit, all the silly stuff that they throw out there to make anybody who says anything that's a little out of the ordinary or a little away from what the professional press is saying seem like really weirdos. It's not like there isn't any serious issues that need to be discussed, mind you. It's just, you know, let's focus on the really, really silly stuff, right? Now, one of the pictures that they had were a couple of the protesters sitting there, and it looked like they had like plastic milk cartons, and with lights in them. And they were, according to the caption of the picture, said they were singing Kumbaya. And it's like, were they really singing Kumbaya? You know, with the AGC, we'll never know for sure. And that's the sad point. I mean, these guys are supposed to be the professional journalists, right? These guys are supposed to be the ones that are on top of the game. But no, they're not. They're just throwing out their usual fluff crapola. And then the blog does a better job than a lot of these professional newspapers are. The articles they had were just a perfect example of what is wrong with the professional media. You know, and I'm sure there are some people in the protest movement who have some rather naive and silly ideas. I've met a few of these people myself, not necessarily people in the protest, but I know some people on the left who I think are a little bit naive. Hey, I consider myself in the radical middle, and I look for practical solutions to practical problems. I've met and talked with people who support the Green Party, and I'm like, why? Why aren't you trying to build a decent grassroots organization? Or better yet, why aren't you trying to take over the Democratic Party? You do have enough organization to do that and really make a difference to make your police whole. But no, they want to get somebody elected president, which is stupid. And of course, they're the idiot libertarians, which I got on a couple of weeks ago or a couple of shows ago. You know, it's just stupidity. But the truth of the matter is, there are many people who have some serious questions about the global economy and the role of the 8 governments that are involved in the summit meeting. Are any of these issues going to be addressed by the AJC? Are any of these things going to be brought up in a rational and intelligent manner? You know, saying, you know, that while there are some silly people at the protest, there are some serious issues that need to be discussed, global climate, things like that. There are a lot of important things, but of course, you're never going to hear this from the AJC. It's just more of the same, he said, she said, crapola that we've come to expect from these so-called professionals. And of course, there was no small amount of fawning over Mr. Bush in particular, but the G8 members in general, even though Mr. Bush's policies and his actions have proven to be as naive and silly as anyone on the protest side. The idea that we can instantly reclaim Iraq or remake Iraq into a democratic society just like that is ridiculously naive and silly. The idea that we would be greeted by the Iraqis with flowers was naive and silly. And these are actual policies. This is not pretend stuff. This is actual policies. You know? And never mind that the fact that there are American soldiers still getting killed in Iraq and Afghanistan. Never mind the news of the memo that, in essence, sought to give Mr. Bush almost dictatorial powers when it came to the torture of prisoners. And Mr. Ashcroft, you know, saying flat out that he wouldn't give the memo to the Senate committee investigating this thing. Oh, no, nothing about that. Nothing to see here. Move along. Isn't everything going wonderfully? Oh, look, here's an article about this and that. Isn't this wonderful? Here's an article about a dollar store. Oh, wasn't that nice? Nothing serious going on. You know, in the porn industry, a fluffer is someone who keeps the male porn star erect, his penis erect, in between takes, so that when they're ready to shoot again, they can go right into it. And that's essentially what the professional media, and especially the AJC, the Atlanta Journal Constitution, or the Urinal Constipation, as I call it, especially them, they're nothing but fluffers. Not necessarily for Mr. Bush in general, in particular, because, you know, they do a lot of fluffing for him, but also for just the administration in particular, the right in general, just all these kind of fluff pieces and, oh, everything's all right. They know what they're doing, you know. Maybe they don't know what they're doing. You know, they might raise a question about that from time to time. But really, you know, they're just saying what they want to say, and they really don't care. Because, you know, like I said, they're more interested in maintaining their monopoly than they are in having an actual real newspaper in this town. And it's a damn shame because, you know something? Atlanta is a very big and a very important city. It is the most important city in this entire region of the country. It has desired to be the New York of the South, basically, a city designed primarily for business. But you wouldn't tell that it's a city of huge import by the quality of newspaper reporting we get from the professionals. Creative Loafing, which comes out tomorrow, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they have to say, because they are much better than the so-called professionals at the Journal Constitution. Anyway, I see by the clock on the wall that it's time to go. So until next time, This is Joe Vecchio from the Cup of Joe Radio Show, signing off. Bye. Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe Radio Show, is proud to be a member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 2127. However, the views of Joe Vecchio do not necessarily represent the views of Local 2127, the IBEW, or its affiliate, the AFL-CIO. Please remember to support your working brothers and sisters and help keep the American dream alive. The Cup of Joe Radio Show has been a production of Jove Enterprises, Incorporated.